So I want to welcome to all of you to this broadcast for the We Campaigns Over Heart of Mind Radio for the New Millennium. Heart of Mind is broadcast on WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, WBAI.org on Friday mornings at 11 a.m. and on Saturdays on the Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. at 6 p.m. So I'm going to be weaving these interviews through those broadcasts, different times probably, but I really want to reach out to folks and let them know that there really is good work taking place in the world. When we get inundated by the mainstream media, we lose track of the fact that there are still people out here doing beautiful work, trying to save people's lives, inspire people, and create real change from a foundation, which I experience with WE as a foundation of love and compassion. And that's very difficult to find in our media landscape. So that's what we're here to do. And joining me are, well, I'm Catherine Davis, and joining me are Sue Blythe, Jana Larson, Jason, and Yvette Dubell. Thank you so much, all of you. Sue, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little something about the work that you're doing?
Thank you, Catherine, and thank you for inviting us all here today. This is a wonderful gathering, and I am Sue Blythe, and I'm the coordinator of We the World's Campaign for Environment. And I have been inspired by, the Earth Charter, by Martin Luther King, by the Baha'i teachings. I come full of inspiration to do the work that we're doing. And I see us as uniting the hearts and just helping people to find that sense that we're one human family and one earth community with a common destiny. And that's from the Earth Charter, and which is a document that was launched in the year 2000 and really encapsulates for me the vision of the world I want to create for my grandchildren and their great-grandchildren. I think with the work that we're doing right now has impact on many, many, many generations to come. So it's important that every day includes some of the peacemaking, caring for the planet, and finding new and exciting ways to do that. And my way of doing that is with a collaborative storytelling adventure that I've been developing kind of as a, well, it was started 10, 12 years ago as a quilt that I made for my grandson. And he was the best traveled two-year-old I ever met. And he was, I made a quilt with a map of the world on it. And then all the way around were patches. And each patch represented a person in our family. His family going through both sides up to the great grandparents. And as he was 3 years old, we started talking about all of these people. And I realized everybody on this planet has a story about who they are right now in this planet, or in this time. And the Earth Charter calls it a critical moment in Earth's history. So I'm collecting stories of people who are doing wonderful work and then putting it together in a big story of the human family. And the story that I'm telling for and with my grandchildren is that we're going to win all of the global goals of the United Nations by 2030. And we're going to reverse global warming by 2050. And in order to do that, we have to choose what we're going to do today and tomorrow and next week. And so that's my job, I figure, at We the World, is to help people find action steps that they can take right now to make a big difference for the future.
That's a great start. Thank you. That was excellent. So, Yvette, please let us know how you are inspired into this collection of souls we call the We Campaigns.
My name is Yvette Bell. I'm artist researcher coordinating the Freedom Campaign, or the Campaign for Freedom, however you want to say that. And the podcast series that we had planned to launch as part of the MLK celebration didn't quite work out as anticipated, but we're revamping that with like some new people now. so we're still going to be doing that podcast series. And it looks like the first one is still going to be looking at featuring organizations that provide courses and different kinds of resources to educate people about how to get involved in, So the premise of this, of featuring these organizations, is that what I used to teach people when I was doing community programming locally was that you have a bit more power and leverage if you can get involved with policy making during the feasibility and needs assessment phase rather than after it's been passed as a law. And so learning about how our bureaucracy actually works, so that in the same way that we have all come to we and found our places, that you can look at these different aspects that shape policy and find a place where you can be engaged. And then that leads to the organizations that we'll be featuring that provide these courses. And so I think Bridge Alliance, I think that's the name of the organization. They have courses that, depending on you put in your zip code, and they have courses that will teach you about how the committees work that basically manage to counteract gerrymandering, like basically when districts are drawn every 2 years. And so how to be a part of that committee and be a part of that feedback process as a way to prevent gerrymandering. And so educating people about these different aspects, these different levels and processes involved in making policy, so that people can feel a bit more empowered and be a bit more strategic in our community action. I would love for it to become something more organized beyond that, but maybe as we study what we have done here at WE, we can look at how to replicate that for the change action networks or something like that. So I was talking to Angel about doing a documentary kind of with that in mind, trying to distill what, because what's really interesting about WE the World as an organization is, Rick, to me, seems unusual in that he doesn't seem to have like a huge ego attachment. And he's not threatened by women. So he listens to women. And he has created this kind of, or fostered this collection of people that I feel like enables a bottom-up kind of innovation. And so I see this being one of the ways to see how we can get some momentum going around that. So we'll be doing that. And then we're doing another series in the podcast aimed at empowering entrepreneurs, and specifically want to cultivate more social entrepreneurs. But we're going to be reaching out and featuring organizations that are working with Indigenous small business owners and other BIPOCs. To really engage them, not only in just promoting their business, but we'll be doing a hot seat type thing, a hot seat coaching, where they can come in with an issue or challenge, and I will give them some really quick coaching to look at how we can address that. And the objective is to try and have 3 takeaways for them by the end of the episode. So we'll see how that goes. And then we want to just play around with the podcast medium a bit artistically and creatively. Initially, we were going to do something with TikTok, and then that kind of didn't work out. And I have similar issues with the TikTok as a corporate brand that I do with Facebook. So decided that maybe I don't want to do that. So we're going to be looking at other ways to do that. A Cure for Racism, that project was also initiated as part of our MLK celebration. And so I have a book by the same title that'll be coming out later this month, and will be a part of that same project. So that'll be a bonus that people get with the donation. And so there's like a whole series of programs, resources and materials around that, you know, educating people about, you know, my approach to a cure for racism. And yeah, so we'll be doing some more social media stuff, I guess. Not I guess, but trying to, looking around, like building more conversation around that, empowering people, encouraging people to overcome, helping people to deal with the obstacles that are involved in allyship, and not being afraid of hard conversations. And so I've done like a whole series of like interviews and podcasts that'll be coming out, I guess probably at the end of the month, the next month, in April. And, you know, who knows how long, because I have no control over that. But those will be coming out like in the next month or so, talking about much of this and some of my thoughts and reactions to approaches to unifying the country in these divided times. So that's what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. So I can't think of anything we need more than unifying people in these divided times. So I want to go a little bit more into that a little bit later in this conversation. So, Jana, please introduce yourself and let us know about the work that you're doing with the We Campaigns at We.net.
Hi, my name is Jana Larson, and I'm the volunteer slash outreach coordinator for We. And I also more or less managed our global unity calendar that we have that's open to everyone. And I'm definitely not the visionary that Yvette is or that Sue is and a lot of people at We. But after observing, being with We for 3.5 years, I and observing what everybody was doing and being so admiring of all the things that they were doing, the good work, I realized that maybe what I was good at it was organizing behind the scenes. So that's what I do. I now that it's a little bit more organized, I'm meeting a lot of people and bringing in volunteers to We and trying to help get all the campaigns with all the volunteers that they want. It's not necessarily going all that well all the time, but it generally is. So I'm really a connector of dots and trying to see where people can fit in. And so that's a lot of fun.
And you should know that the work you're doing makes everything else possible. So it's a real gift. It's really a gift. And I appreciate your humbleness, but I just want you to know that I think all of us have a lot of gratitude for the work that you're doing, because you're doing what we can't in many cases or don't have the time to do. So you have our undying gratitude for the work that you're doing to help us with what we're doing. I mean, and this is true of anything. No government can run by one person alone. No army can run with just a general. There's got to be people who make the actual work possible. So
thank you.
So I think that
I really enjoy it. I mean, I just am just meeting. It's just so exciting, and it's fun when you connect with people and they're so appreciative that there's something that they can do, especially with getting the We Can projects going. We did just have one with Angelina in Botswana, and she's been by herself all of this time, but now we suddenly have three more people who are interested in starting We Can chapters in Egypt and, let's see, Burundi, and I think in Rwanda. And we're also connecting with another person in Nigeria. And they're just thrilled to be able to be a part of We, and their enthusiasm it just permeates. It's really exciting.
It is. That sounds very, very encouraging. So thank you for sharing that and giving us a bit of an update on what's to come. And Jason, I'd like to invite you to come in and introduce yourself and speak about what inspires you and maybe what you'd like to change in the world as you go forward.
Hi, I'm Jason. a business and technology major at Stevens Institute of Technology. I'm an assistant to Catherine. I help her with the health campaign and also the MLK campaign that was going on. For me, the thing that inspires me is just giving back to my community and anyone who, you know, I can help. I want to help them as much as I can. And being that I'm still a kid, the resources aren't always there for me, but joining the WE campaign, it's been great. Just meeting all these new people and seeing the impact that they have with either small work or major work. And it's something that, you know, I never really thought I could have a chance at doing, because, you know, changing the world is difficult. You need a group of people who are willing to do anything and everything possible to meet that goal. And I think the WE campaign is the perfect place for that. I mean, as a kid, you know, you don't always get the opportunities to be in places that you want to be at. So what I want to do is help other kids, adults, anybody reach their goals and make this world a better place and also make it a more enjoyable place to be.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's really inspiring. I really love that, because I can remember, I still remember what it was like to be a kid in the world and wanting to change things. The things were different back then. I mean, you know, it was different wars and different liberties and rights that I was out there advocating for than we might see now. But I think that allowing children to have that foundation, young people, young adults, to have a foundation, it can be very self-empowering and can help us as we go forward. I think I wouldn't be where I am now if I wasn't that kid out there talking about, you know, bring peace and stuff like that. So it's important. I really am grateful for your presence and your contribution, Jason. It makes a difference. Sue, you wanted to say something? Unmute, yeah.
I am just really happy to have you here, Jason. I know that you probably came in through Jana and the volunteer matching that she's doing. And I would like to make you aware and invite you to participate in a youth group that's evolving in our campaign for environment. And what's happening is on a Earth Charter 20th anniversary global call, I met two young people ages 12 and 10 at that time who wanted, they were asking the adults to please let them be part of the activities that the adults were doing. And so I reached out to them, because in my collaborative storytelling, we have always seen the young people as the leaders of what we're doing. Children have such a clear picture of the kind of world they want to live in, and they're not afraid to speak it. And so I want to use those voices and tie them together with young people, teenagers, young adults, who can help them to communicate effectively what the children and the youth are asking for. And I know Greta Thunberg did such a wonderful job of expressing exactly what it is that touched the hearts of so many young people that it created the global movement. And I feel like that kind of communication is what the world needs. And so my goal is to support with the adults and elders, mm-hmm. to support the voices of children and youth. And so my request would be for you to join us and help. Working with Catherine on radio is just a really wonderful medium for getting these youthful voices out. And just wonder how does that sound to you?
Yeah, I'd be completely open to that. I mean, the whole reason why I'm here is to get awareness. And I thought I was pretty aware. And I know some of my friends, they're not along at the same level that I'm at. And I found out that I'm not even close to being remotely aware of what's been going on, what's happened in our past, what's happening now. And now that I'm gaining all this knowledge, I want to use it and, you know, make a difference.
Beautiful. Well, let's get together and see what we can
do. Wonderful. Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah, yeah, definitely. And yeah, Jason, maybe you could just host something, a show with a bunch of young people, and we'll broadcast it. That would be great. I would love that. Yeah, I'd love that. Yeah, because, you know, that's where the real strength and the young people are the ones who are going to have to live in the world that we're creating right now. And I think you mentioned that in another broadcast, Jason, that it's really young people almost have to stand up and fight for their own futures. And it's really our job as elder people to support that movement forward, because ultimately you guys will be here and we'll be memories. So we should do what we can. And, you know, this is also the Indigenous principle. You take actions based on 7 generations down the road. And if you don't, then there's a great danger of things going wrong. And we have a good example of what that looks like with things going wrong, living in the world we're in today. And it's interesting because I can remember, I mean, in the 70s, I would say. I mean, I was a young adult in the 70s or a teenager. And there was this whole energy of liberation and love and people wanting to get together. And it didn't have the same environment that we have now of anger and fear and all of this issues of racism and gender issues. It was a totally different kind of world. And it, in a way, arose spontaneously from the young people of that moment, you know, turning against what was happening in the 50s and what had happened in the past and wanting to bring enlightenment. And it somehow was, I would say, undermined, but I think that is a natural outpouring from young people to want to bring that peace and love and enlightenment into their world, the creativity. So that's a big part of what all organizations need to do. Maybe children should have the vote. We wouldn't have so many monsters in power if kids were voting. At least, you know, it's a possibility. I
don't know. I mean, I think kids sometimes, though, are influenced by, it depends on the kid. I think that's sort of like all adults necessarily shouldn't have the right to vote, you feel sometimes. But I think about the things like, okay, so I got involved in activism and social justice because of the band U2. And it was basically because I thought The Edge was cute and I like, you know, Bono's voice. You know what I mean? And so, you know, the Amnesty International literature just happened to be a part of the package. You know what I mean? And that spoke to me because I was a young Democrat back in those days. So I actually started out being like a political activist with the Democratic Party. But then with Amnesty International, and I got this sort of global awareness of, you know, like political prisoners of conscience being like a thing. But initially it was just the music that sort of drew me in. So I think that if we can like, I don't think it's an instilling in, maybe it's something we take away from kids when they're little to make them think that this is how you should be to fit in. That was sort of one of the reasons that I homeschooled my kids, was I felt, particularly as a Black person, the historical narrative sort of like sets you up to fail. And then everything is sort of like, you know, sort of structured around that. But also there was that what's required to conform. And as a person of color, in the context of that particular, an institution rooted in that narrative, it's pretty much damaging to everybody that's not white. You know, because it teaches you that you and your history, you know, your culture doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of like looking, you know what I mean? Like in terms of, I think we have to first look at like, how do we empower young people not to think that they have to like closet parts of their soul to live in the world? But then, okay, so I don't want to go down the rabbit hole, just saying that bit. But when you were talking, Catherine, about the 70s, it reminded me of like we felt that way in the 90s.
You know? That's what I mean. It sort of comes from a youthful place, whenever that was for the people. I mean, I'm sure in the 50s it was the same thing. They used to be beatniks back then.
Well, beatniks, right? You had 50, hippies. Yeah, right.
You know, so it's. I think it's a younger generation that time.
Well,
you
know, I don't know, but we're not particularly young anymore. You're still in it, Catherine. It's not like you're not in it anymore. So I
this
think
is
that
true.
Really speaks to what
this
does it take
true.
To stay in it.
I think right? you have so, to have your feet in it already to even want to stay in it. I think that's true. And then those of us who have been in it for a while are going to do our best to be like Bono and put out the inspiration. Not that I could compare myself to that. But
we learned a lot about marketing this stuff from Bono.
Mm-hmm. So we do have a path
right?
to make that connection. And I think the We campaign is doing that by listening to the voices of young people and those people who are engaged in this organization will understand that they have powerful voices. I think it takes actually listening
yes.
and responding to people, young people, so that they understand that what they have to say is important. So I remember when I was a young child, even very young, 6 or 7, I couldn't tell the difference between adults and children. I just thought they were bigger people and I was a little person, but that we had basically the same level of intelligence. And now that I look back, that may have been true.
Right.
But,
right.
you know, I just think that, like you said,
right,
to empower children to understand that they come in with the capacity to engage and be a part of our society and civilization. And we as adults should listen to them, at least hear them out, whatever it may be. And you're right. There is the negative impact of media, and we have a lot of toxic celebrities that have negative impact on young people. So it's not an easy path. Education is toxic in many ways, as you were saying, Yvette, that makes a difference. I've done a tremendous amount of research. When I was growing up, things were so bad that I never actually had a black doll. When I was a child in this country, dolls were only white. And so that has a really negative impact on a young child, in which every magazine cover, every toy, everything you read in the books, all the pictures, they don't depict the real people. So in my books in those days, Egyptians looked like Europeans. So it took me a long time to develop a concept of who I am in the world. And gratefully, we've moved beyond that, but there are other things that hold us back. So I think what you're doing as an artist is really important too, because when we have organizations that are functioning in a way that is going to uplift people, then more people will be uplifted. So that's really, really, really great. I did want to mention a little bit about the campaign that I'm doing with Jason, is the health campaign. And I'm not sure that I've been able to navigate getting it off the ground. So we are going to be having soon a campaign in which we're encouraging people to do something healthy, at least the one thing that they can point to that's healthy, that is being offered by another volunteer. So I think that we will get things off the ground as we collaborate more. And I find myself being very much concerned with people's health. I had mentioned it a little earlier that I've had personal interaction with the COVID virus. I lost my oldest brother. I have a brother in the hospital now who is working, you know, striving to be alive. And I think that what people are not paying attention to is how the politics have impacted people's lives by so many crazy campaigns of don't wear a mask or the virus isn't real and nobody's really getting sick, when people are just looking in their immediate environment where they may not be impacted, but not understanding that other people are much more adversely to put out there. So for instance, my middle brother, I believe he most likely contacted the virus in church. He's a deacon for the church and he's very much involved, and he wasn't taking it that seriously. He just wasn't. And my older brother was an electrician. So that means he was sort of a essential worker. And when the state opened up, he had massive exposure, and that impacted, you know, to the point where he lost his life. And then there's the other part of the problem where people are not getting access to care. So my older brother went to the hospital. They didn't do very much for him. They just sent him home. And so he just went, which on one level was good that he was home with his family and not locked away behind a barrier and couldn't interact, but they didn't offer him any solutions. My middle brother is in a different state and he has a lot of medical support. So he's in a wealthy hospital in Connecticut. He has extremely good care. So where you are and what you have access to can impact outcome. And my other concern is the fact that there are very useful treatments that people could be having access to, but are being denied. And I think that's a problem. We've been waiting for over a year for a vaccine, and all this time people could have been treated with a higher quality of care and would not have lost their lives had they had access to it. So access to healthcare is really, really important. And the other side of that coin is self-empowerment, what you can do to help yourself and to work through stress, to work through nutrition, to work through specific vitamins, to be paying attention to your gut and what's happening in your gut and the digestion. So there are all these issues that are what we need to pay attention to anyway with regard to our health. But I think there needs to be a real push towards moving into a state of self-responsibility with regard to health issues so that people can do everything that they can to remain healthy, so that even with exposure, they have a much better chance and would not necessarily have the worst outcome. And there's another group of people, which they're calling long COVID, which they're surviving COVID, but they're ending up with extreme autoimmune diseases. And they're suffering for months, 3, 4, 5, 6 months after the virus has been defeated because their systems have broken down. So there's a lot of information that I think that people need to learn about. There are certain nutrients people can take, vitamins people can take, things they shouldn't be doing like sugar, excessive coffee, and other things that break down the system, so that we can shepherd our own lives by the choices we make, including meditation and deep breathing practices. I happen to be a teacher of Qigong, and there's a lot of movements that you can do that will impact organs, that will impact circulation, that will impact the lungs. So there's a lot of information for people who will engage with that information and actually act upon it to transform their health and transform their lives. And that's really what inspires me, because I have been dealing with health and health challenges since childhood. My mother had multiple sclerosis, so I know about different kinds of challenges that people have. So that motivated me to look for ways to be healthy so that I wouldn't find myself in that position. And I think that I would love to have been able to help my brothers, but they didn't listen to me because there are so many doctors out there who are telling them that they don't have to take any steps, just go home and wait. And then when it gets so bad, come back and then we'll take some emergency measure. The doctors are not really, in general, I can't, you know, it's not across the board, but in general, people are not getting the help that they need. And we need to help ourselves. And to me, that's the purpose of the health campaign. The virus is something new, but this is something that people deal with, especially people of color, because of the level of stress and generational stress that impacts our capacity to be healthy. So that's why it's important to me. And that's why I'm working on this campaign. And I love working with WE because it really does help to get the information out there and to get people engaged. So that's what I hope to be able to accomplish with this work, is to just really give people the knowledge, the information, to be self-empowered and to be able to heal. Our bodies were made to heal themselves. And if we do the right thing by it, our bodies will heal. But of course, there's the environment and all this other stuff that adds to the load. But yeah, that's my mission and why I'm doing this. And because I think we deserve a good life, and we all come into the world with some kind of mission, a gift, an offering. And I think that we can realize that. And when we can, that's what will change the world. So that's where I'm coming from. So I don't know, Jana, if you wanted to come back in.
Yeah, well, I think you're the perfect person to lead the health campaign. So I'm so sorry to hear about your brother who died and your brother who is getting good treatment, but you know, who may suffer long term. And then your mom having MS, that must have been hard to see and live with. But also with the health, and I know you talk about this, is the mental health aspect and the effect on people who've lost their jobs, can't afford to pay their bills, the single moms out there, people suffering from addictions, and just how to deal with being, you know, not able to go out and live life as normal, or being isolated in what you do if you're elderly or disabled, or somehow dealing with something that prevents you from being able to get out even a little bit. So for me, I'm used to being isolated, so I can just keep on saving the world from my computer and meet people all over the world. And that helps keep me inspired and hopeful, and working with WE because I love everybody there and we're adding to the family. So I feel pretty good and hopeful still. Some days I wonder, but overall in spite of all the bad things out there happening, I still think that we live in a good world, and I think there's a lot of hope, and the people that I like to be with are out there, so it behooves me to try and be with those people. So that's what I do.
Excellent. I have a lot of hope as well. I think that there's just so much that we can do to enrich ourselves. And that's what we're doing with this organization. And we are still in the MLK campaign. So would any of you like to talk a little bit about the general MLK campaign in the context of all that's going on in the world? Sue, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I have a quote of Dr. King that was from his Nobel Peace Prize lecture in 1964. And he said, "This is a great new problem of mankind. We have inherited a big house, a great world house in which we have to live together. Black and white, Easterners and Westerners, Gentiles and Jews, Catholics and Protestants, Muslim and Hindu. A family unduly separated in ideas, culture, and interests, who, because we can never again live without each other, must learn somehow in this one big world to live with each other. And so I'm of a mind that, as we were talking about earlier, learning to communicate across generations in a way that really is possible now, especially with the new technology, in a way that's never been possible before. And sharing information about health and well-being and knowing the things that help humans and the natural world to thrive. We're much more aware. The science of the last century and this one enables a kind of care, knowledge and care that we've never had before in human history. And so what I was interested in, Catherine, is let's just say that we're participating in the youth and elder climate conversation. One of the things that we want to share across generations is that sense of health and well-being. And something that we can do right here and now is ask you if you would be able to share something that we and the listeners and Jason can participate in that has to do with that sense of deep breathing and movement that you do as part of your life's work. Is there something you could do in just a couple of minutes right here?
Well, you could just do a moment meditation and just close your eyes and be aware of your breath. And actually allow your awareness to flow into your body with the inhale. And with that awareness flowing into your body, connect to the energy of your heart, the energy of your spirit. Allow your physical body to expand with that inhaled breath. And allow the awareness to accompany the exhaled breath. And with the exhaled breath, let go of some of the stress and tension, some of the anxiety, so that with each exhaled breath, your body begins to release and relax. And we can continue with an aware breath for a few moments to reconnect to the truth of who we are and to let go of all those attachments that are holding us down. So we just inhale deeply, bring your awareness deep into your body, expand the chest, open into the back, and then exhale with your awareness, allowing the anxiety to float out of your body with the exhaled breath. And so anytime we're feeling anxious or are having issues, we can take a break, take a time out, and just do a few conscious breaths, aware breaths, to relax our body and get rid of the height and the intensity of what we may be feeling. So rather than jumping into an argument or jumping into an interaction or feeling defensive, take a step back, take a few breaths, and then re-engage from a calmer place.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And as it happens, I'm doing a whole series at the Open Center in New York starting next week. There's a free intro for people who want to go in there and take an hour of movement, breathing, and relaxation for free. And then if they want to sign up, they can sign up for the series. But yeah, this is the work that I do. And it has it's what keeps me alive and it's what keeps me young. Now, granted, I probably don't look as young as I did 20 years ago, but I think I look all right for an old lady. I think I feel pretty good for an old lady. So that's good, you know. I just last year I had my 65th birthday. Next year I'll be 66. And I can move pretty good for someone whom I thought would be over the hill at this age. It turns out not so. Turns out you could still be strong and healthy at any age. So I think that's important information, and that people can do this for themselves. Yeah. So we've been going on for a little while.
I think that hill keeps moving.
Say that again.
I'm sorry. I said, I think the hill just keeps moving as you get older.
Over, yeah. Over the hill, you know,
like
is
when you're
over
20,
there.
30.
Right? Yeah.
You never... When you're 20, 30 seems over the hill. When you're 30, you know, 40 seems over the hill. When you're 40, 50. Now that I'm 50, 50 is middle age. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
So,
but it's really just a state of mind. Because
I didn't see it.
You missed the hill.
I missed it.
Yeah, because now the person you were through all these passages is still alive within us, and we can express from that youthful state and create from that clear mind that we had in the beginning. It's just that we're better at expressing it now, which is cool. I actually like it. I so much enjoy being older than I did being a young person. I didn't like being young at all.
Yeah.
I didn't know how great it would be. Can I ask a question of you all before we like wrap up, Catherine? Do you mind?
Yes, not at all.
It's sort of a question that I'm asking sort of, I'm thinking about Jason, but especially given like we've all been in this for a while. So we've all seen things that we very much thought were going to happen. You know, we thought things were going to change and then it doesn't. And then it seems like things have gone back and we stay in it. And you were talking about the impact of stress. And so I was thinking about not even just trauma, but like kind of like heartbreak and trauma and heartbreak, like how we process that and still stay inspired and still stay passionate. Because Jason is, what are you, like 19, 20? Jason?
18.
Okay. So, you know, like if you think about when we were young and all the things, all the disappointments and traumas that you have to kind of like recover from, like what would you say to somebody, say to Jason, what kind of advice would you give him about what you've learned about recovering and remaining, not just like remaining passionate, committed to your integrity, your sense of understanding what's right and there's a right way to do this. Like what have you guys or you ladies learned about that in your journey that you would pass on and advise about? How do you recover? How do you keep going? How do you stay inspired?
You keep going by keep going. You know, you just have to continue to put one step in front of the other despite the disappointments and the heartbreak. But I think the one thing that has kept me uplifted or at least able to pull myself out of that dark place that you get into is that I don't betray myself. So even if I lose in the game, I never betray myself. And so to me, that's what keeps me strong and makes me able to recover from being knocked down. Because even if I lose, if I get fired, if I don't can't get my vision across, I'm true to my vision and I just keep walking with that. And so as time passes, all the things that I thought that mattered don't really. The only thing that matters is what's happening in my own inner self, that I continue to live according to my deepest and highest wisdom. And to be honest, to bring love to what I do, and I forgive myself when I mess up. That's what I do. Anyone else?
Yeah, I would say definitely forgiving yourself and know that if you look back and say, I wish I wouldn't have done that, really you probably at the time either weren't old enough to know the consequences, but you probably had a good intention and you just didn't know. And the other thing is that, you know, the thing about the glass is half full or half empty. If it is half empty, that means there's room for more. So it's never, if you just want to keep it empty, you can, but you don't have to.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. Great question, Yvette. Thank you.
And I would like to respond also that...
Sue, you want to answer?
Yeah, please. I would like to say to Jason that no matter what you run into, there is someone who has been there before. And it's always helpful. It has been helpful to me to find the people who have handled whatever it is I'm going through and to make that connection with someone usually older who understands what it is and can just give you an ear. And sometimes that's all you need, or may have some advice if you want it. But the other thing that occurs to me is that you, as a young person, have, you know, you talk about the inner child. You also have an inner elder who is wise and has it all. And you have that in you right now. And to be able to trust that, you know, if you're thinking, just ask yourself, what would my elder me say about this? What would my seventh generation want me to do about this? You know, just think larger than yourself. And of course, if you have a spiritual or religious connection, that just be there to be open to the guidance that comes.
That was lovely. So Jason, do you feel adopted?
Personally, you know, as a kid, you got to pick up these behaviors on your own. You know, nobody kind of shows you the way on how to deal with trauma, heartbreak, all those kinds of things. And I know for me, like, I've always kind of been on more of the mature side. I don't really express those kinds of emotions. I kind of just either bury it deep down or I kind of just let it go. It's either one or the other. And I think the part about, you know, forgiveness, like forgiving yourself for any mistakes that happen, is something I'm still working on, because I usually bear the weight of my own mistakes, as well as, you know, anything that happens within people I care about, even if I had a hand in what happened. And I feel like I usually take on a lot of like their emotional stress just because I can handle it. And I mean, I had a conversation with Heidi in a youth talk probably 2-3 weeks ago, and she was talking about I think love, care, and respect, and we broke down those topics, and she was asking me like why don't you you know, talk about the things that bother you, but you take on everybody else's. And for me, it's all about being selfless. I mean, I'm a martial artist. I play sports, so I know what it takes to compartmentalize. That way, you know, you're there for the people around you, and the people who are in my life, in my circle, they're important to me. So, you know, I'm willing to put my problems aside so I can help them and keep them happy, make sure everybody's doing okay. But yeah, there does come a time that you have to be selfless. And I think during this pandemic was probably an eye opener to me, because talking about mental health, I used sports being outside of my house as, like, you know, a distraction, so I didn't have to deal with things. So I didn't have to really think about things. And literally the first 2 days of being inside, I was gone. Like, I just was numb to everything. I couldn't really figure out what was happening because it all just hit me like really quickly. And I remember, like, my friend, I disappeared for a little bit. My friends hadn't heard from me in like 2 to 3 months. And I was just like, you know, it wasn't something I was expecting to do, but it happened. And I'm glad that I was able to see everything that was in front of me, because I have a tendency to ignore everything that's in front of me, but see everything that's in front of everybody else and try to help them solve the problems. And I think that's just my nature. I want to help people. I want to make life easier for everybody. And once everybody's life is easier, then I'm the only person left, and then I'm forced to, you know, deal with myself.
Yeah, that's very powerful, Jason. And I would just say that over time, that really adds up, and that it would be good to get into the habit of self-care and getting what you need from life, because you expend a lot helping the people around you, but once you fall, then there's nobody there to help them, even if that's what you wanted. And part of maintaining your strength and your self-mastery is that self-care. So always remember to keep that in the mix. It's how we survive. And it's why some people don't, because they're not taking care of themselves, not just physically, but mentally, spiritually, and begin to look at all the facets of ourselves that we need to pay attention to so that we can be present in those situations where somebody else might need us. Because the danger is that we are just avoiding ourselves by taking care of someone else. So yeah, I think you're on a good path.
Say your name.